Coming up on Golf Today, six-time PGA Tour winner Max Homa joins us from Torrey Pines, Southern California native, looking to jumpstart his 2025. And the postman, JT Poston, also says hello from Torrey, talking about his process in carving out three PGA Tour wins and his outlook for the season. And 13-time PGA Tour winner Mark Calcavecchia stops by for a past champs chat on his win at Riviera in 1989. Is the Hall of Fame in his future? Find out next on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Hello, Golf Today on a Tuesday. Damon Hack alongside Ryan Lavner. Yesterday, we sat at this very desk and broke the news that Tiger Woods would not be teeing it up this week at the Genesis. We knew Xander Schauffele wasn't going to play, and yet this field is strong to quite strong.
Rory, Scotty, Jordan. I mean, this is why the signature events were concocted, right? To have the best players on the PGA Tour get together more than four times a year at a championship and a championship layout. You look at what's already transpired in 2025 in the Siggies. Hideki Matsuyama at Kapalua, Rory McIlroy at Pebble Beach. Looking forward to see who joins them this week at Torrey Pines.
Did you just call them the Siggies?
I did.
The signature?
For short.
I mean, you're so cool. That is pretty cool. I got to incorporate that into my game. The Siggies. Yes, it's the third Siggy of the season. The Genesis. Let's go back to a few weeks ago, earlier this season at the Farmers Insurance Open. You may recall Harris English beat Sam Stevens by a single shot to capture his fifth career PGA Tour win and his first since 2021. Now, Harris entered that final round with a one-shot lead and finished at 8 under par. Now, this week, the PGA Tour returns to Torrey Pines South for the Genesis Invitational. The PGA Tour making that decision to move this year's event from its usual home at Riviera Country Club due to the devastating wildfires in Southern California over the last month. Now, the Genesis Invitational, here's some details. All four rounds at Torrey Pines South, $20 million purse. The winner receives 700 FedEx Cup points, 46 of the top 50 players in the world. And defending champ Hideki Matsuyama, who shot that 62 at Riviera 1 year ago. For more on this week's event, let's say hello to Kira K. Dixon. Now, Kira, you've been talking with officials on site. What are you hearing at Torrey Pines on this Tuesday?
Well, Damon, first of all, when you think about bringing an event within a three-week time span to a new location, for them, it was easier to go somewhere where they have been before. So Torrey Pines was a very clear choice. And tour officials also told me that the Century Club, which puts on the Farmers Insurance Open, is one of the best groups that they work with all year operationally. So in that regard, it was also a no-brainer. But the Genesis Invitational team has been living on site essentially here for the last 3 weeks. And even though operationally it is something that's easy, it doesn't come without its challenges. Something that's unique to Torrey Pines is the fact that they have to deal with four separate entities, essentially, to be able to put everything together. So first of all, you have the city of San Diego. Then you have the lodge here at Torrey Pines, which is independently owned. You have the Hilton La Jolla, which is just down the road, which is where all the media operations are run out of. And then you also have the Glider Port, where all of the broadcast operations, that's owned by UC San Diego. So you have to be able to contract with all of these different organizations, plus the Century Club, plus the Genesis folks, and bring everything together in a really short time frame. So it's been a lot to be able to get here to the place where you walk in today and all of the farmers bunting is gone. All the farmers signage is gone. It's been replaced with the Genesis bunting, the Genesis logos, the traditional black color scheme. So you definitely feel like you are at the Genesis Invitational. They've got different player activations and things of that nature that really make it feel like the Genesis Invitational. Now, as you mentioned, this golf tournament will only be contested on the South Course. In terms of the setup, I spoke with some tour officials about what differences are they going to be making from what we saw at Farmers just a few weeks ago. And they said, well, first of all, because all 4 days will be contested on the South Course, we'll be able to incorporate some new hole locations. And the par threes might look a little bit different. But beyond that, they probably won't make any other noticeable changes, but 37 players were in the field at Farmers, and they will also be in the field at Genesis. So over half the field did not experience the Farmers Insurance Open. So it'll be a completely new test for them. And for those that were here, they will have some new hole locations to certainly go out and test them. But speaking of tests, guys, I feel like I'm the designated weather girl these days because the conditions are going to be making an appearance. A TGR Foundation staffer told me, what's a Genesis Invitational without a little bit of a sprinkle? Unfortunately, we will likely have more than just a little bit of a sprinkle. I've heard the words atmospheric river tossed around, which the tour meteorologist told me is just a fancy way of saying lots of rain. We could have up to 2 inches of rain from Wednesday to Thursday with gusts of up to 24 miles per hour. So, of course, the tour setup team will be matching hole locations with the forecast. And, of course, you know, the Genesis Invitational always creating quite the test. But the big priority for them is to make sure that they are constantly having those affected by the LA fires in their minds. So much effort is going to be made to make major contributions to those affected by the fires. And Tiger Woods is not yet on site. He's expected to join later this week.
All right, Kira K. Dixon in San Diego as Torrey Pines prepares to host a PGA Tour event for the second time in 3 weeks. Ryan Lauber, that's what's top of mind to me. And Kira talked about in that report just the manpower and woman power that it takes from San Diego to Los Angeles to pull something like this off.
Yeah, logistically, certainly a headache over the past couple weeks, obviously for a good cause. And I think it makes a lot of sense to have it at Torrey Pines. I know other golf courses were bandied about. Maybe you go back to PGA West. Maybe you go to Sherwood, which was close to Riviera. Maybe you go even to Shadow Creek in Las Vegas. I do think Torrey Pines makes a lot of sense. And we heard it from Kira in that report there about what could potentially be changed sort of a couple weeks after the Farmers Insurance Open. We heard yesterday from Mr. San Diego, Todd Leonard, about the golf course and what to anticipate. Like, you can't get much more difficult than Torrey Pines already was. You look back at what happened at the Farmers Insurance Open, 8 under par won that golf tournament. Just 24 players finished under par. Now you have a situation where it's all 72 holes on the more difficult South course. Well, just a couple of weeks ago, 66 was the low score that you experienced over the weekend. And I know that Torrey Pines, among golf architecture, you know, gurus, is a very polarizing layout. You either love it, and you think it demands a lot of precision off the tee, and it, you know, you really have to golf your ball. And then there's other people who say it's monotonous and it's boring and just sort of redundant. To me, I like the test that it presents. This is a classic championship venue where driving the golf ball is of paramount importance and mid-iron play is rewarded in a big way. And so, to me, this feels like a mini U.S. Open.
Yeah.
And I think the field is going to support that, and I think you're going to have a great leaderboard by the end of the week.
It played the ninth toughest out of 50, Torrey Pines South, 1 year ago. It is a major championship venue. I've always felt that the golf course does take its pound of flesh out of the best players in the world, and now a lot of them will see it twice as they enter the part of the season where you get the Bay Hills and you get, you know, PGA National and you get the Players' Championship. To visit Torrey Pines twice, it's going to take a lot out of these players come Sunday evening.
Well, we talked about the field strength a couple weeks ago at the Farmers Insurance Open. Probably wasn't as strong as it has been in years past, most likely because the top players are looking ahead. A lot of rumors that it was going to be heading back to that golf course. You also had like a flu bug that was going around at that time, so you had like a spate of withdrawals. I do think the run-up to this point has been probably a little bit easier. I mean, you had record scoring at Kapalua. The scoring in Phoenix was great. Pebble Beach was great as well. This will be the first real kick in the teeth that these players have experienced, and I think that's okay.
Well, the Genesis moves from Riviera to Torrey Pines because of the devastating wildfires in Los Angeles. But there is some good news. Because of the devastation across California, Genesis, TGR Live, and the PGA Tour are launching the California Rises initiative at this year's Genesis at Torrey Pines to drive relief and recovery efforts for affected communities. And as part of the initiative, Genesis is donating $8 million, including 100 tournament vehicles and cash contributions. And the Tiger Woods-hosted PGA Tour event will highlight stories of resilience and the response from the community, first responders, and charitable organizations as well. So a silver lining in a very dark period for so many in Southern California. Now, a lot of big names have come to San Diego. Ludvig Åberg, the UCLA Bruin Patrick Cantlay, Wyndham Clark, Hideki, the defending champion Jordan Spieth, coming off that T4 finish at the WM Phoenix Open. Justin Thomas hooping it in his final hole of the day in Phoenix. But let's flash back to last week. The world number one had some trouble, Ryan. This was the first day on the fifth hole.
I felt that one intimately. A little side slope of the bunker. Not the first time that Scotty shanked out of the bunker. You flash back to the Tour Championship last year, ended up bouncing back and winning the FedEx Cup title, but not certainly the way that he was looking to start this Phoenix Open.
Yeah, this looks like Rust and Aaron Oberholzer talked about it last week, kind of working his way back from Pebble and now to Phoenix. But this is some of the good, and you might say great. This is the 10th hole.
You see a hole out eagle from the bunker. I see, however, a missed fairway, something we're going to touch on here.
Oh, just a little bit. What are you, glass half empty guy?
Yes, yes. This is like a typical love it or laugh it segment.
All right, how about the third round? We spin ahead. Another missed fairway. Okay.
Not necessarily the longest rough at TPC Scottsdale, but you do have less control over the golf ball. Misses short and left.
Absolutely.
Finds a hazard.
Yeah, this is a scoring opportunity, that par 5, 15. So now, you know, rare sight in the drop zone for the world number one.
Scotty with a wedge, you typically think 5-10 feet at max. Instead, misses just long.
And showed some frustration.
I mean, he's battled frustrations. It's been simmering and karate chop, and then Scotty Scheffler, being the guy that he is, picks up the bag. And if you're looking at sort of the small sample size of what 2025 has brought for Scotty Scheffler in the two starts, you sort of say, what's going on? And you look at two statistics in particular that have sort of tailed off a little bit in this first quarter of 2025. Driving accuracy way down, and scrambling. I sort of chalk up scrambling to not totally being shocked by this. You know, if he misses a month of the golf season, he's probably trying to work up to speed with the long game. So I sort of look at the big picture with Scotty Scheffler's scrambling. Driving accuracy, though, I think is very important. It's going to be of particular importance this week. There is no driver of the golf ball who at least is at an elite level who is as accurate as Scotty Scheffler is. 23rd on the PGA Tour in driving accuracy for a player at his distance is insane. And you look at sort of the distance, the proximity from the edge of the fairway, he leads the PGA Tour, so he's not hitting it particularly crooked either. So
right.
If he is missing fairways, he's doing it very close. It's clear that Scotty Scheffler does not have complete control of his driver swing right now. That is going to be important this week at the Genesis Invitational. Torrey Pines, brutally long, 7,800 yards. Kira just mentioned it, atmospheric river. It's going to be wet. It's going to be slow. The fairways are going to play wider, but if you miss them, there's going to be just such a severe penalty. You need to avoid the thick rough, the grabby rough. I'm very curious to see if Scotty, after what was a pretty poor outing, the WM Phoenix Open off the tee, if he can get things sort of situated with Coach Randy Smith over these next couple days.
The one thing Scotty's talked about throughout this last few years is the process and how important the process is to how he goes about his business. And that process was severely interrupted over the offseason when he injured his hand. And instead of maybe playing some money games and working on his game the way he wanted to, ramping up for 2025, he had to rehab and rest and go to the gym. You know, while others were starting their season, he was trying to get strength and feel back in his hand. So I think you're seeing the missed fairways and you're seeing the missed greens and the shank from the bunker. Isn't that rust more than anything of larger concern?
Yeah, I think he's trying to play catch-up at this point. It's going to be very interesting to see here over these next couple weeks. I asked Scotty Scheffler ahead of his 2025 debut at Pebble Beach, would you consider adding a start between now and the Masters just sort of to make up for some of the lost time? And he said, look, I'm not going to add one just to sort of add it for the sake of doing so. He's not going to disrupt the tournament cadence. But if he's not happy with a particular part of his game, then you start to look at where could Scotty Scheffler add a start? Could he play the Cognizant, which would then give him three in a row with Bay Hill and then the Players' Championship? Well, PGA National probably isn't a great test of golf to sort of prepare you for Augusta National. Could he add the Valspar Championship at Innisbrook? We've seen players in the past who have added that if they want to get sort of a major championship-type test. Could do that. That would likely then give him four in a row if you include the Houston Open as well. So there's not like a slam-dunk start that Scotty Scheffler could make, but I think this week will be very telling. If he continues to struggle with his driver, if he's not quite happy around the greens, don't be surprised if he adds a star between now and the Masters.
And do you see this also as an opportunity for Rory McIlroy, Hideki Matsuyama, Justin Thomas, Wyndham Clark, Jordan Spieth to kind of close that gap? Xander obviously injured, but, you know, Scotty's not just worrying about his own game. He's also seeing some of his immediate rivals off to a very hot start, Rory McIlroy in particular.
Yeah, I think this is a huge opportunity for Rory McIlroy, because you look at a player who, unlike Scotty, who had to take some time off, Rory actually played deep into the winter, which was unlike him. Mm. You know, he sort of locked himself in the closet in October, the 21 days inside the swing studio, played a lot in December, either, you know, sort of buddy trips with friends, did the showdown at a time of year when he typically takes the entire month off, then he goes to the Middle East and is sort of getting back in the groove that way. This is now a player who told me just a couple of weeks ago at Pebble Beach, yeah, I'm starting sort of on my front foot and able to hit the ground running, unlike Scottie Scheffler. And so it seems like disparate trajectories at the moment, but I've got a feeling we're going to see them meet quite head on here pretty soon.
We'll see how Scottie and Rory handle what should be a very difficult test. 4 days at Torrey Pines South. Golf Today just getting started on this Tuesday. Still to come, I'm going to check in with Golf Channel senior writer Rex Hoggard. That's last partner. He's got details on when a deal between the PGA Tour and the PIF might get done. Stay tuned.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Big win for 32-year-old Thomas Dietrich on Sunday at the WM Phoenix Open. Put on a dominating display down the stretch to break through on the PGA Tour for his first career win. Birdied the final four holes to win by 7 shots. One of 6 players to win the WM by 7 or more shots. And the PGA Tour schedule rolls on. Genesis this week. Mexico Open at Vedanta World. Then we get into the Florida Swing, Palm Beaches, Bay Hill, Puerto Rico Open, and the Players' Championship. Kind of the signature event, the number one of the PGA Tour. Rex Hoggard joins us now from Torrey Pines. It's great to see you, buddy. Speaking of number one, the world number one, struggling a little bit last week at the WM. How much did this Christmas injury, in your mind, throw a curveball in kind of his process and his comeback to competitive golf?
Well, we all know he's a man of formula. He wants to have everything very routine. We've seen it every day when he comes to the golf course. He warms up the exact same way. My guess is his offseason is very similar to that, where he had an idea once he finished up the end of the year, which would have been at Tiger Woods' tournament in the Bahamas, that he was going to take a couple weeks off, and then he was going to start working his way back into conditioning, and he was going to be ready to play the Century to start the year, the first signature event, and that certainly put a curveball in it. It set him back. He had to have the surgery, couldn't hit balls the way he wanted to, and I think what we've seen in these first 2 starts of the year since that surgery, since coming back from injury, is little more than rust, because he did not have that formula. He didn't have his quote-unquote spring training.
Rex, no Tiger Woods this week in the field. Per his explanation, it certainly sounds like more emotional than physical. Do you believe we'll see him ahead of the year's first major at the Masters?
Yeah, I just talked to a member of his camp over at the range and asked him, had his mother not passed away tragically just a few days ago, would he have played here? And he said, absolutely. He felt like his game was trending in the right direction. He felt like his body was cooperating. He was looking forward to coming back to Torrey Pines. Hadn't been here in a very long time. So I think we'll probably see more of him down the road as we start talking about getting closer to the Masters. But clearly he just wasn't ready mentally.
Rex, since JT released that memo last month, in your day-to-day, week-to-week interactions with players, are you seeing more openness, willingness to share information? Is the temperature different since JT said, hey, let's be more media accessible, more fan-friendly?
I think we started to see it actually even before JT released the memo. When you go back to last year when SSG was announced as a partner, and the idea that everyone is in this together, you have equity in PGA Tour Enterprises now. This is your product as well as everyone else's, so you're the one that needs to make it work. I think a lot of players had already started to come around on the idea that I need to be better about this, whether if that's being more open with the media, the way JT described it, whether if that's doing more in-round interviews the way we've seen it, even doing interviews before you tee off on Saturday and Sunday morning, if you're in the lead or close to the lead. I think those are all things that players are starting to embrace. And I think what you're going to end up seeing, and Lav and I talked about it on the podcast last week, was the different things the tour wants to do to grow the fan base. We talked about this fan forward thinking on the PGA Tour's part. I think most players have started to embrace it. But when you have a player like Jordan, like Justin Thomas, who goes out on a limb and sends a letter to the membership that really asks them to be engaged on this process, I think that went a long ways as well.
Rex, pace of play was a scorching hot topic the last time the PGA Tour was at Torrey Pines for the Farmers Insurance Open, with on-course reporter Dottie Pepper saying this really comes down to respect. Do you anticipate that pace of play is still going to be a topic this week, even with the smaller field size?
Probably, because I don't think this is going to go away. I think, as Charlie Hoffman pointed out, they've been talking about it for 20 years, and they talked about it for 20-plus years before he got on the PGA Tour. So I don't see it going anywhere. I think the conversation is certainly open. I think the PGA Tour has laid out some ideas that they feel like can help pace of play. But no, I don't think it's going anywhere. Now, clearly, it's not going to be as bad this week. You have a limited field on just one golf course. You don't have a lot of things to worry about. But I was just out walking the golf course this morning. The rough is up. The golf course is a little bit softer than what we saw when the Farmers Insurance Open is here. So I would expect the scores to be a little bit lower, but also the pace of play should improve at least a little bit.
Last year, the Torrey Pines South played the ninth most difficult course on the PGA Tour out of 50. Can you just give the viewers a sense of how much this golf course, you talked about the rough, takes out of these players? Rain expected, rough high. How difficult will this test of golf be?
I think what you'll see here this week is a version of what we saw just a few weeks ago when Harris English won here. Just a little bit softer. The rough is up. It was interesting talking with players as they teed off this morning. I had one player tell me that they didn't feel like they've cut the rough since they were here last time. But I don't think you'll see that much difference. I actually had a chance to talk with Harris English this morning, and he thinks it'll play very, very similar. He feels like it's a really hard test, depending on the weather that you pointed out. We're going to get some rain. We have some onshore wind, and that's a little bit different for this golf course as well. But I think what you're going to end up seeing, to your point, Damon, is this golf course may rank inside the top 10 on degree of difficulty twice this year on the PGA Tour.
Rex, in the wake of the news last week that Commissioner Jay Monahan visited President Trump at the White House, what's your understanding of where the PGA Tour and the PIF deal actually stands?
My understanding, at least the financial terms of this deal, that they've reached some sort of agreement, but that's just not one agreement. They've come to agreements on multiple fronts. That way, whatever they present to the Department of Justice, and we've talked about this in the past, if this deal is going to go through, it's going to have to get the green light from the Justice Department. They've probably given them a couple of different options, what I've been told. That way, they don't have to go back to the drawing board if Justice decides that that's not going to work. If this option is not going to work, then go to B or C or D or keep going down the list. Now, that's the financial side of the equation. And we're still going to have to wait to see how that works out with this review process. Beyond that, then you have to figure out how to bring the two sides back together. And as we've discussed in the past, that's the really complicated part.
And we'll hear from Adam Scott later in the show. Rex Hager with his finger on the pulse inside the ropes and outside the ropes. Thank you, Rex.
Thanks, guys.
All right, guys, let's take a look at the latest Comcast Business Tour Top 10, which rewards consistency and reliable play throughout the season. Here's how the top 10 looks as we head to the next signature event, the Genesis Invitational. Thomas Dietrich moves to number two behind only Sepp Straka. There are zero Americans inside the top five and eight different nationalities represented inside that top 10. And coming up on Golf Today, we're set to be joined by a PGA Tour winner and California native in Max Homa. The six-time PGA Tour winner is looking to turn his season around in 2025, and we'll ask him about it on the other side of this short break.
Back on Golf Today, PGA Tour at Torrey Pines South, and Max Homa has history in both this week's Genesis and at Torrey. Back in 2021 at RIV, defeated Tony Finau on the second playoff hole. The win was Max's second career victory on the PGA Tour, meant a lot to him. Max also has a great history at Torrey Pines, won there. 2023 Farmers Insurance Open, did a walk and talk. Began the final round five shots off the lead, held by Sam Ryder. Shot a final round 66 to claim his fourth career PGA Tour win and another win in his home state of California.
Max Homa has certainly been one of the best American players over the past half decade. You see it there, six PGA Tour wins, two-time U.S. President's Cup, including last year in Royal Montreal. He even won an NCAA championship as part of that vaunted Cal team.
And Max Homa joins us now from Torrey Pines. I want to start with the important stuff. The first time I heard Not Like Us, it was on your Instagram page last year. Your thoughts on Kendrick Lamar's halftime show performance on Sunday?
Yeah, it was great. I don't want to get in the middle of a beef. I do like them both, but that was awesome. I was wondering if he was going to play it. He did. Even said, "Hey, Drake," straight into the camera. So it was, that was all-timer.
Max, you're back at a place you won in Torrey Pines. Are good vibes a tangible stat, or at a golf course as difficult as this, does it just simply come down to execution?
Yeah, I think it's mostly execution. Good vibes always help. Mostly it's usually just the city you're in. Like, I'm just comfy here. You know, I know where I like to go. My family is nearby, a lot of friends down here. So I think that helps a lot. But on a golf course like this, you just have to hit it well and putt it well. So it's a lot of execution.
Max, Scotty Scheffler, you played with him last week in Phoenix. He said, even though you haven't had your best stuff of late, your attitude is great. What was your reaction to the world number one kind of giving you your props?
Yeah, I didn't really know what the question was that prompted that, but I just really get along with Scotty. He's definitely somebody, I mean, if you got kids, like, that should be a role model, especially in the golf space, the way he plays, the way he conducts himself, and then to, you know, just always seems quite kind with all of us, whether it's in the media or, you know, I just enjoy playing golf with him. So, yeah, that was great. You know, he's just a really good dude with his head on, just as perfect as could be. You know, at times you want the best player in the world to, you want to have some animosity towards that person. The only animosity I have is envy of his golf game. So pretty special human.
Max, in your career, you've certainly seen the highs and the lows of this game. How does it help you to go through a stretch like this where maybe you're not getting the results that you want, to have experienced it before, even just a couple of years ago?
I don't really know if it helps a ton. I think what helps mostly is just knowing how good I have played. So it's in there. But, yeah, I mean, a part of me laments the fact that I got to do this twice, it feels like. But also, I don't know. I wouldn't say, like, I'm super proud of my, like, driving and iron play and putting even when I'm playing well. I am really proud of my work ethic most every day of my life. I'm proud of my, you know, energy when I wake up in the morning to get better. So I guess I know I have that in me as well. So it's a challenge. It has not been very fun at all. But it does make, I guess to answer your question better, it does, I do know what it feels like to win after some hard times. So I'm looking forward to that very much.
Well, every day is a new day in golf. It's also a new day in fatherhood. You know, Lacey posted that great video of Cam with the golf club and took a little chunk out of your shin. What's it been like seeing your kid kind of warm up to the game of golf already?
Yeah, I mean, he's around it a lot. We got a putting green in the backyard, so he goes out there too. But yeah, I think he's a lefty, which would be a bummer just for him, because I don't have very many left-handed golf clubs. My caddy Joe said he would give him, he could raid his garage. So Uncle Joe's coming in clutch. But no, it'll be great. I'm never going to push golf on him, but I do think he'll be around it so much he'll want to get into it a little bit. And that would be a true honor for me. I know kids don't listen to their parents, so I know I'm going to have to get somebody else to give him lessons. But the good news is I have a lot of friends who are incredibly good at golf, so he'll have a lot of great coaches.
Max, you've won a tournament hosted by him. You're on a TGL team with him. You have grown close to him over the past couple of years. What are the main lessons in golf and life that you have learned from Tiger Woods?
Yeah, first off, just want to give my condolences to what he's going through with his mother and to his whole family. So, you know, it's a bummer he's not here, but I'm hoping he's doing all right. It's just cool. I mean, I guess in a way, like, we've talked a lot of golf, but we've also just talked a lot of other things, normal stuff. You know, I think that's just to see someone who's that elite at what they do be normal. You know, he's... like everybody, we have our quirks and we have our obsessions of things, but to also just be able to talk about the Dodgers and the Lakers and mess around a little bit is awesome. But yeah, you know, I try to pick his brain much as I can when I'm around him, but also just, you know, at times you just got to be normal, turn off the golf brain and enjoy yourself. So it's been really fun to be on his TGL team and spend some time with them. And I don't know, it just never gets old watching him swing a golf club, so it's cool to do it in person from very close up.
You know, you mentioned the Dodgers and the Lakers, and few ride harder for their hometowns than you do with Los Angeles. How difficult has it been to see your native city suffering the way it has over the past month or so?
Yeah, it's been tough. You know, I know that this isn't like a new thing. Natural disasters happen all over. But this was the first one. You know, we've had fires in my hometown of Valencia a lot. We used to have them every other summer, but we expected them. People were used to them. Never thought one would happen where it did. Or not just one, a bunch. So it was just weird to, I don't know, be able to turn on the news and know exactly where they were and have my own memories from that area. Certain streets, certain hearing about certain restaurants, just places I've been. So that, I don't know, it was the first time I feel like one of these things really like hit home, other than just the general sympathy and empathy you have for people going through a hard time. This was like, you know, it felt very real because I could picture all of it so clearly. I'm honestly quite glad that we moved the event. I don't know, one, how you could have it up there, and two, I personally just didn't want to drive around and see it so fresh after. So I was fortunate that a lot of my friends and family, everyone was safe. Home's not exactly always safe, but just happy everybody is healthy and got out at the appropriate time. But my heart's out to everybody, goes out to everybody. It's been tough, and I, you know, the news cycle goes, it's kind of, it seems like it's on the back page of everything now, but it's still at the forefront of a lot of our minds. So glad this tournament's going on. Glad they're doing a lot of great things for the California Fire Foundation, and just trying to help rebuild that thing as quickly and best we can.
Max, changing topics just a little bit. At this golf course 2 years ago, you were sort of the walk and talk trailblazer. What do you think is the next frontier for broadcast enhancements, getting players and fans even better connected?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what it will be, but I do think, you know, Justin Thomas wrote a letter a few weeks ago about access. I think we as players just being more accessible. I think it would, like, I've got a couple of ideas, but maybe having players chat more, and you could just kind of use their voice to overlay it, but maybe just explain how they'd play a hole. I just think that when you watch these sports we watch all the time, like football, I've been fascinated listening to, you know, Romo and Brady. I like learn about football. It's something I've watched since I was a little kid, yet it's something so complex I don't exactly know what's going through their heads. So to learn from them, I want people to be able to play golf and learn a little bit instead of just seeing a golf shot and thinking, oh, that was conservative or aggressive. I'd like them to have an idea that, hey, actually that was exactly where he was trying to hit it because of this, and this chip he's hitting with this club because of this. You know, talk about grain, lies, things of that nature, so people can learn a bit more about the game and then either go try to do it on their own when they go play, or just have better context when they are watching the golf.
I love that idea. It'd be quite informative. And give our viewers a sense of how long it takes you to snap back after you do an interview, even a walk and talk. Are you able to lock back in quickly? Does it take you out of your routine? Or are you able to kind of say goodbye, thank you, and you're right back to being kind of in go mode, in game mode?
I mean, I won that week, so I think I got right back to it. So I don't think it's like a massive issue. I guess it probably depends on the person, but it just felt like I was, you know, chatting with my caddy at times, him, if he was asking me a question about something. So I could just do a little brain vomit on everybody when they ask. So I didn't find it too distracting. It's definitely unique, but I'm of the mind now that since I've gotten older in this game, that whatever the fans want, we should do. So if they like that, we should do that more. If they have better ideas, we should do that more. So if it helps the fan experience, I am here for it.
Max, we always appreciate your time and your insight. Best of luck as you chase another victory at Torrey Pines.
Thank you all very much. Hope you guys are having a great day.
And you too. There he is, six-time PGA Tour winner Max Homa, still ahead on Golf Today. The golf world excited to see Tiger Woods make his season debut this week, but we'll have to wait just a little bit longer after his latest withdrawal. Mark Canizero of the New York Post is set to join us to give his thoughts on what's next for Tiger in 25.
And welcome back into Golf Today. We're flashing back to the 2000 Buick Invitational at Torrey Pines. Phil Mickelson took the victory that week, and in doing so, ended Tiger Woods' six-tournament win streak. Still finished T2, so it wasn't all lost. That, of course, was during Tiger's epic 2000 campaign, in which he would win nine times, including three major championships. Just look at that 2000 Farmers Insurance Open for Tiger Woods. Finished T2 four shots behind Phil Mickelson. But I love this note, Danny. The $264,000 check that week moved him to number one on the PGA Tour's all-time money list. That was almost $13 million. He has since eclipsed that just by a little bit. He's now just shy of $121 million. And, of course, this week with the PGA Tour at Torrey Pines, the golf world was excited to see Tiger Woods make his PGA Tour debut. But, unfortunately, on Monday, he withdrew and put out this statement on social media. Quote, I plan to tee it up this week, but I'm just not ready. I did my best to prepare, knowing it's what my mom would have wanted, but I'm still processing her loss. Thanks to everyone who has reached out. I hope to be at Torrey later in the week and appreciate the continued kindness since my mother's passing. And with more, we say hello to Mark Cannizzaro, golf writer for the New York Post. And Mark, you all set for a trip to Torrey? What was your reaction to Tiger's WD on Monday?
Well, you know, sadly, it's another one of these kind of, we're hyped up and promised to see him get back and play again. He's, you know, obviously, he's, you know, it's been since last year, and things just seem to always come up. Now, I mean, this is obviously a very devastating situation, and, you know, as we all know around the game, Lav, you know, Tita has been by his side, so I'm sure that's a very devastating situation. You can never measure anybody's grief. So it's thoroughly understandable what's taking place. But the shame is, as good of a field as we'll have out there at Torrey Pines, you know, it was a massive curiosity to see Tiger play again. And, you know, even though he's not a threat to win tournaments anymore, he still moves the needle. People want to know. They're interested in what everything Tiger does. So it's a disappointment. It's a little bit of air out of the balloon, I think, this week, even for the players that are in the field.
I want to circle back, Mark, to what you just said, not a threat to win tournaments anymore. For most of our adult lives, we've kind of, you know, wondered at this time of year, what's Tiger going to do for the rest of the season? What are your expectations for Tiger at the age 49? It sounds like they're pretty low.
Well, he's kept them low, D. You know, as you know, he's, you know, he even, you know, at the beginning of last year, if you recall, he really was setting the bar low for himself, you know, and, you know, our expectations are hopefully just to see him in the majors. I mean, that's really all we expect and hope for. So whatever he does, you know, I mean, I don't know. Is he going to play, you know, TPC in March? I don't know. Arnold Palmer, you know, where he's had great success. You know, last year, obviously, he came out with the once a month thing, which is basically one major a month. So, you know, I don't think we're going to see him again until the Masters, I wouldn't think.
Mark, what do you think is the importance of Tiger Woods on today's tour when he's 49 years old, 1 year, away from being Champions Tour eligible, maybe playing 4 to 6 times a year? What's the importance of Tiger in this era?
I think the importance, Ryan, is that there's still interest in him, even though he's not that dominant, you know, multiple winning guy again. But he's also taken a different role, obviously, as we've seen, on the boards and whatnot, and we all hope trying to unify the game a little bit, which is disrupted and discombobulated, and you know, the viewers, the fans, and we in the media that cover these events, we're all the losers in this because we're just not, you know, having all these players out there. And Tiger has, you know, decidedly taken on a role to try to move the game along and be a little bit more of a steward of the game. So that's where I see him a little bit, other than, you know, those ceremonial majors. And, you know, I am fascinated to see what he may do once he turns 50 in terms of, playing some Champions Tour stuff where he can take a cart and doesn't have to feel guilty about it.
Mark, your thoughts on Justin Thomas's memo last month asking the players to be better partners with the media, more access, more insight to how they go about their business. We just talked to Max Homa, who said he too would love to see them give more of a game planning type of information to reporters. How much of a step in the right direction is it, considering how busy the sports calendar is for fans to watch other sports?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you guys for having me on after Max Homa, the most popular and great guy on the tour. And I look like just this dirtbag, you know, talking out of my apartment right now. So, everybody loves Max, and Max has great ideas. And I love what he said. My favorite part about that interview that you just did with him was he said, if the fans come up with better ideas, I'm all for trying stuff. You know, that's the way the attitude for the players should be. And, the JT thing, listen, JT's another guy that's trying to take a little bit of a leadership role. and you know, as he's seen Tiger do and some of the other prominent players. And I didn't have a problem with the things he said there, because it's true. And listen, selfishly speaking, we are in the media, and that memo was essentially to try to be more accessible to us as conduits to, you know, to the viewers and the readers or whomever is listening and watching. And, you know, that's the interesting thing that I see, like the TGL element guys, that, you know, the uniqueness of that, other than the cool technology with the indoor, you know, and everything like that, their superpower, if that's ever going to work, is going to have to be the players' interaction when they're mic'd up. And the problem is, you have some guys that, no offense, they're just kind of boring flatline guys, and they're not going to be a Max Homa or, you know, a trash talker or like a Kisner and these kind of guys that like to get after a little bit. So, you know, I think that that should permeate not just in TGL, but it should permeate into the mainstream PGA Tour events, because the landscape's changing and people want to see different stuff. And let's be honest, as much as people don't like LIV or the anti-LIV people, you know, LIV is doing some things to, you know, in ways that are kind of nudging the PGA Tour along to change its act a little bit and become younger and a little bit more progressive, you know, for the younger audience. So I liked what JT had to say.
Perfect segue, Mark. I was going to ask you, because the USJ and the RNA over the past week opened the door ever so slightly for LIV golfers into those major championships. What do you think of the move? Was it enough, or was it still insufficient in your mind?
I wouldn't say it was enough, Lav, and I would certainly not say it was any kind of a seismic shift in terms of, you know, thawing these two parties out, so to speak. But I did think, starting with the USGA, what do you use, Olive Branch, I'll use whatever, and then now the RNA. I'm really, really encouraged by these things are happening, because these are now the first two moments where the tour and, you know, the quote unquote mainstream tours are acknowledging LIV, at least in a little bit of a mainstream element, if you will. So I hope this is a start of more of that, because I think it's ridiculous to think, I think it's ridiculous to have world rankings and not have guys like Jon Rahm and DeChambeau, for example, you know, who's clearly, if he's not the best player in the world right now, he's in the top two, to not be acknowledged. You know, I've always been bothered by the world rankings thing, and I know that's an entirely different subject, but I just feel like there's enough technology with the world rankings that they can weight the LIV tournaments for their lesser fields and 54 holes in a way that they could still gain points to get into these tournaments. But, you know, I hope that the USGA and this RNA move are the beginning of a little bit more thaw between the two sides, which have obviously been very acrimonious.
Yeah, lots happening inside the ropes and outside the ropes. Mark, we appreciate a few minutes. I'll see you at TPC Sawgrass in the Players' Championship, buddy.
Thanks, guys. I'll see you out there, Lav, too.
There he is, Mark Cannizzaro of the New York Post. Lots to watch this week, by the way, in the game. LET in Riyadh, first round Thursday, 5:30 a.m. The Genesis Invitational at Torrey Pines, all four rounds on the South Course, 4 p.m. Thursday. And then the Chubb Classic, that's PGA Tour Champions down in Naples, first round Friday, 12 p.m. Eastern Time. If we flash back a couple weeks ago, final round, Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines, Sam Stevens had a runner-up finish thanks to a clutch up and down on the 72nd hole after finding the water. Final round 68, finished with Vault Sam to the top in the Aeon Swing 5. It's a nice putt there. But another player making moves in the Aeon Swing 5, Michael Kim, Cal Golden Bear. Sunday shot a final round 67. WM Phoenix Open, thanks to great shots like this approach in the par 4 14th. Michael Kim, who attended Torrey Pines High School, by the way, also punches his ticket to the Genesis Invitational thanks to a runner-up finish. So there you are. Aeon Swing 5 includes the top five FedEx Cup points earners not already exempt from the full field events preceding each signature event. Sam's good play earned him a spot in this week's Genesis, so he gets another trip to Torrey Pines this week. But the Aeon Next 10, this represents the top 10 players not already exempt from the FedEx Cup standings. Now for this week's Genesis, the Aeon Next 10 is filled from the FedEx Cup fall players who finished 51 through 60. Golf Today continues after this.
1 hour down and 1 hour to go on Golf Today. And hour number two is jam-packed. Take the trip down memory lane with 1989 LA Open winner Mark Calcavecchia as he gives his thoughts on the state of the game. And three-time PGA Tour winner JT Poston will also join us in hour number two. What does the three-time PGA Tour winner have in store in 2025? And Adam Scott recently took a trip to the White House as the PGA Tour attempts to finalize a deal with the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. When might a deal get done? Here, Kay Dixon joins with details. This is Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Ryan Lavner. As you said, a busy time in the week of golf. We got PGA Tour champions. We got PGA Tour. We're getting to the good part.
We certainly are. Max Homa, great thoughts from Torrey Pines in that first hour. Rory McIlroy has just arrived to Torrey Pines to get his Genesis Invitational started. Should be a big week in the game.
Yeah, speaking of PGA Tour champions, this week the PGA Tour champions back in action in beautiful Naples, Florida. Tiburon Golf Club is the host site. This week's Chubb Classic, you can catch live first round coverage this Friday at noon Eastern time right here on Golf Channel. I wanted to flash back to the 1989 LA Open. Riviera, Mark shot a final round 68 to beat Sandy Lyle by a single shot. And because of rain delays, Mark had to play 27 holes on the final day. 1989 tried to be a huge year for Mark. Later that summer, he won his first and lone major, the Open Championship, Royal Troon. The victory came in a playoff over Greg Norman and Wayne Grady, and Mark was the first American winner of the Open in 6 years at the time.
And here's a look at the life and times of Mark Calcavecchia. Look at that resume. 13-time PGA Tour winner, that Open Championship that you just mentioned, Damon, and a four-time U.S. Ryder Cup team member. And it's time now for a past champions chat. We are certainly pleased to welcome in the 1989 LA Open champion, Mark Calcavecchia. And Calc, we certainly appreciate you joining us today on Golf Today. When you think back to that week at Riviera, what are some of the memories that first come flooding back for you?
Well, it was obviously a great week. I think it was only my second or third LA Open at Riviera, and you know, Riviera speaks for itself. Everyone loves that golf course, and I did too. And I was playing great. I'd won a couple tournaments at the end of 88, and won the Phoenix Open in 89 a couple weeks before that. So I was coming in pretty confident. And a couple things I remember, I chipped in five times from the Kikuyu, and down out there from that stuff, let alone chip in five times. So that's something that really sticks out. And yeah, Sunday was a long day. It was cold and it was damp, but I just kept plugging away and making pars and getting up and down when I had to. So it was a great win for me.
Well, Mark, a few years ago you did like a top 10 list of your favorite golf courses. I think Shinnecock was on the list and Troon was on the list. Marion, you had Riviera listed at number five. You said it's the best bunkering in the United States and every hole is great. Just from the architectural standpoint, what moves you about Riviera?
The bunkering is incredible. It's just, you look at a hole like 16, that par three. It's just the coolest looking hole with that kind of that dead tree sticking out there. And just the fact that the whole course is down in the valley with the clubhouse way up on the hill. It's right off Sunset Boulevard. Thank God the fires didn't get to it. That was a terrible situation, obviously. But luckily the Riviera is okay. I know most of the rest of it isn't. But, it's a great course. And, I always enjoyed playing there. I love playing there, actually.
Calc, along those same lines, Rory McIlroy a couple weeks ago talked about how much venues matter. They matter to the players. They matter to the fans. Do you have any thought on the sort of tests that today's players are facing and whether the PGA Tour would do better to sort of focus and showcase the best golf courses in America and not just those who are potentially sponsorable?
Well, that would be cool if that could happen. But, the there's a lot that goes on with, you know, finding a great golf course for a PGA Tour event. You know, some of them we play or did play when I played out there aren't so good. A lot of guys don't like a lot of the courses we play. But, you know, then you have to deal with membership and, you know, crowds tearing up their golf course. So it a lot goes into finding a great golf course for a PGA Tour event. And some places just don't want it or don't need it.
Calc, you won in Argentina, Australia, Korea, South Africa, 13 wins on the PGA Tour, 27 runner-up finishes, four-time member of the United States Ryder Cup team. Can I make a case that Mark Calcavecchia belongs in the World Golf Hall of Fame?
Well, it sure would be nice, but, you know, I was close. I'm not going to disagree with you, but if I could have got one more major in there or just have Sandy Lyle hit a skull into the lip of that fairway bunker at Masters in 88 or, you know, one or two other things go right my way, I might have been there by now. But it's not something that occupies my mind at all. You know, I had a good run, had a great career, and still, you know, still love to play golf. I don't play too much anymore, but yeah, it would have been cool, that's for sure.
Calc, you were blessed with the benefit of a great career that spanned on the PGA Tour from the 80s and the 90s, the 2000s. In your opinion, what was the most interesting era of those three to play golf in?
You know, I'd probably say the late 90s and the 2000s, mainly because of the arrival of Tiger Woods, obviously, when he hit the scene in 96. It all changed right then and there. And, you know, I got to play a lot of practice rounds with him and playing tournaments with him, and I saw stuff that I'd never seen before. And I'd gotten to play with Mr. Nicklaus quite a bit as a young guy here in Florida. But that Tiger Woods era around 2000 was, I think, the best golf that was ever played. So I'm going to have to go with that.
Calc, it seems like everybody has an opinion on how to fix golf, unifying the game at the highest level, having the players be more media accessible. When you look at the PGA Tour in the modern era, what troubles you and what encourages you?
Well, look, I understand because I was a young guy once too. So now, you know, you turn on a PGA Tour event, you know, no matter where it is, really, unless it's an elevated event, and you'll look at a leaderboard and you're not really sure who anybody is. But I was one of those guys in the late 80s, middle 80s. Nobody knew who I was either. So there has to come a time where there's new guys that hit the scene. And I think we're kind of right in that time about right now. A lot of the great players on the PGA Tour are under 30 now. And it's just going to take time for the public to get to know who they are. Would it be great if, you know, we could have DJ back and John Rahm back and Brooks and Bryson, you know, those guys from LIV, and kind of get everybody back to playing together at the same time. You know, and it's fun to watch Justin Thomas play and Jordan Spieth and those guys, but honestly, they really don't play that much. So it's hard to get all the great players together in the same spot. And I guess right now that's kind of what makes the majors so special, is they're all going to be together playing in the four majors, but that's only four times a year. That's not enough, in my opinion.
Calc, how do you think you would have fared on the modern tour with all the advanced technologies and the detailed practice regimens and the recovery centers and all that? Do you think you would have had still the same successful career that you had, or would it be sort of a new frontier that you weren't necessarily prepared for?
A little of both. You know, my strength back in the in my prime in the 80s was my short game and my aggressiveness. You know, the balls curved a lot more. But I could be aggressive and aim at the flags because my short game was so good. Now today's game, where would I be distance wise? Who knows? I'd probably be up there if it was all the same, but, I'm glad I played when I did, but I'm also kind of sad that, I'm not 30 again right now, playing in these $20 million tournaments. I'd get a kind of a kick out of that, I think.
Well, how do your power? You were unconscious going at the flagstick. What's the state of your game, and maybe more importantly, the state of your health right now competing on PGA Tour Champions?
Well, that's a good question. You mentioned at the beginning of the show that I was heading to Naples, and that was definitely the plan until 2.5 weeks ago I managed to break a rib. So it's getting a lot better, but I'm going to wait till Tucson and play, which is the first week of March, and play Atlanta and Houston and maybe Palm Springs. So, you know, I think last year I played 10 or 11 tournaments and probably about the same this year. But, you know, it's I'm 64. I'll be 65 in June. There's not many guys my age doing well other than, of course, Mr. Langer. And, you know, Jay Haas still plays amazing at 70 years old. So it's getting difficult. You know, my distance is a little bit of an issue for me, giving up a lot of yards off the tees to the guys who bomb it. So that's a little frustrating, but I still love to go out and try and still love to play.
Well, Calc, it's great to see you. I still remember a long ago lunch we had with Brenda and Mark Canizero of the New York Post, who just joined us on the veranda at Augusta National many, many moons ago. Thanks for the time and best of luck and get healthy. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Damon. Thanks, Ryan. Anytime.
There he is. 13-time winner on the PGA Tour, Mark Calcavecchia, still ahead on Golf Today. Heading back out to Torrey Pines, the site of this week's signature event, our Kira K. Dixon caught up with the former world number one, Adam Scott, who was part of a big meeting at the White House recently. She fills us in on all the details coming up. Back on Golf Today, who's that? Rory McIlroy, 27-time winner on the PGA Tour. Notched that victory with that 65-66 weekend at Pebble, Ryan.
First time we're seeing him on property this week for the Genesis Invitational. Does not yet have a victory at Torrey Pines. Mm. Always played well. That even includes the 2021 U.S. Open. Had a shot in that back nine on Sunday.
We can see Rory. First round coverage, 4 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday. In the meantime, we flash back to the 2020 Genesis Invitational at Riviera. Adam Scott took home the title with a two-shot win over a field that included 9 of the top 10 players in the world. Well, the win was Adam's 14th on tour. Scott previously won at Riviera in 2005, but was an unofficial victory due to a rain-shortened event. Our Kira K. Dixon had a chance to catch up with Adam earlier today, and she joins us now. Kira, what did you learn?
Well, as you mentioned, Damon, the 2020 Genesis Invitational champ is in the field, but the last time that he was at Torrey Pines was for the 2021 U.S. Open, where he finished tied for 35th. But Adam's been quite busy off the golf course. He recently made a trip to the White House to visit President Donald Trump alongside Commissioner Jay Monahan, and this is what he had to say about being back here at Torrey and that meeting.
Well, happy to be here. You know, just thankful that everyone at Genesis and the TGR Foundation could go this extra length to get the tournament on this week, given what's been going on. I'm thrilled to be here. And a course where I think it kind of suits me. Riviera is one of my faves, but I'm pretty comfortable down here as well. So looking forward to a good week and kind of need to get my season going. I've played a couple of events. Nothing great, so looking for that kickstart.
Now, as a player director on the PGA Tour Policy Board, you have been busy in some of your recent discussions, most notably is the trip to the White House with Commissioner Jay Monahan to sit down with President Donald Trump. Could you characterize that conversation?
Well, I think it was all really positive. And, you know, I'm certainly not going to speak out of turn. I'm sure Tiger would like to comment because really that's how the meeting came about. And, you know, I think it's just a positive thing that the President of the United States, you know, is such a lover of the game of golf and understands some of the challenges facing the professional game at the moment. And given that things have, which is widely known, been sitting with the Department of Justice amongst the professional game. This is all crazy stuff for me to talk about. Can't believe it. But, you know, that he's a lover of the game and hopefully can be very helpful in kind of getting a resolve for the professional game and help everyone move forward.
In sitting down and speaking with President Trump, what would you describe his motivations are for wanting to get involved in the reunification of men's professional golf?
Well, I mean, it's pretty easy to tie him to the game of golf. You know, he is passionate about it. He owns several golf properties, fabulous destinations around the world. And, you know, he has a relationship with Saudi Arabia, the public investment fund. And, you know, I genuinely think he's a fan of the PGA Tour as well. Certainly a fan of Tiger Woods, like most we all are. And given that this has been tied up in government, believes he can be very helpful.
For those that might not understand why men's professional golf needs to have any sort of influence from the current administration, can you explain some of the roadblocks that the administration could help in terms of bringing the game back together?
Well, I think that the difficult thing is for maybe the administrations to understand why professional golf, you know, coming back together and working more harmoniously, let's say, is not a breach of antitrust or anti-competitive issues, and that's really what was being looked at. And you know, hopefully this can be helped by the president, and things can move forward at a faster pace now.
In the past, the president has said that he could quickly fix the deal and the issues that men's professional golf has seen. And as far as the timeline goes, what are you most hopeful for as we move forward in actually getting to that result?
I think the president is going to help things move along in every sense. But, you know, I guess... things kind of sit with him a little bit at the moment, so I really can't speculate on that. I wouldn't speak out of turn or in front of the President of the United States on any of this.
So Adam told me that he never thought that as a golfer he would be asked these sorts of questions or having these sorts of meetings, but as a player director on the PGA Tour Policy Board, he has found himself in these situations. And now the big question is just timing and when we get from the conversations that are all happening to potential action, guys, with reunification of men's professional golf and figuring out what happens next between LIV and the PGA Tour.
Kira K. Dixon with the former world number one, Adam Scott. Fascinating times, Ryan Lavner. What does this all mean? Roadblocks, visits to the White House. Is a deal imminent?
Really positive is what Adam Scott said in that. And I think when you look at President Trump now returning to the White House, has relationships with parties on all sides of the issue. The Saudis, as well as the PGA Tour. And he's said in the past that he would relish the opportunity to sort of fix men's professional golf, which has been damaged since the introduction of LIV in 2022. And so it certainly seems like we're finally getting close to the financial component of this deal. And obviously that's very tricky when you're talking about $1 billion plus that could be injected into the PGA Tour enterprises. I would argue though that the harder part is what to do player-wise.
Yes.
And reintegrating the players back into the PGA Tour. Because once the financial part is finalized, then the clock is really ticking. Because there really is no excuse for the PGA Tour to not bolster and strengthen their events right away, knowing that there are some players on the LIV side who, if reincorporated into the PGA Tour, could make signature event.
How many?
Could make full field event.
How many players? How many? Like three? Five?
I think five to seven could probably make an immediate boost. And so once the financial part is done, like the PGA Tour players, PGA Tour leadership, probably needs to get over some of the jealousy or the resentment or the bitterness that's been felt over these past couple years in the divide of golf civil war and find a way to get them back and to get them back quickly for the sake of the fans who have really been damaged in all this.
Always been my biggest question, though, is how they would come back, how many, and how soon, how quickly would some of those players who stayed loyal to the PGA Tour, who didn't take $200 million and $300 million, are just going to say, hey, come on back. Come on back. You left and took the money, and now come back and maybe take my money, potentially.
For the betterment of the PGA Tour, those hard feelings probably need to be pushed aside to make the PGA Tour as strong as it possibly can.
Do you think we're getting to a point where there's more unity in the PGA Tour membership and on the board? Because for a while, the thought was that it was split down the middle. Some said, let's get them back yesterday. And others were saying, no, hold on. Those guys left. They can't just come waltzing back to the PGA Tour and take my daily bread.
No, I still think there's some really hard feelings that are going to need to be hashed out over the next couple of months. You talked about Rory McIlroy a couple weeks ago at Pebble Beach when he's talked about the future. He said, I think the biggest obstacle besides the Department of Justice right now is the differing futures of what professional golf should look like.
Yeah, lots still to figure out. We'll see what happens.
Absolutely. And when Golf Today rolls on, a three-time PGA Tour winner is set to join the show. JT Poston is in the field at this week's Genesis Invitational. We're covering a wide range of topics with him on the other side of this short break.
When you say the word process, the first thing that comes to mind is, what's your goal?
You got to buy into that process, because to get in that mindset, it's everything.
Process is behind the curtains, balancing the constant pursuit of getting better.
There's times when it's not working and you need to do something else.
Told ya.
So you could go sideways pretty quickly.
Every year I've gotten better. What if I don't get better this year?
That was a sneak peek of Titleist's upcoming video project, Excellence in Process, which you can check out when it debuts tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel.
Brian, let's flash back to last fall at the Shriners Children's Open in Las Vegas. Titleist ambassador JT Poston earned his third career PGA Tour win with a one-shot victory over Doug Gim. Poston built a three-shot lead in the final round, but ultimately needed to pull a clutch par on the 72nd hole to secure that victory. A little more about JT, a three-time winner on tour. Bogey-free in the 2019 Wyndham Championship victory, reached the FedEx Cup playoffs seven times, two-time All-American at Western Carolina, and a 2014 Southern Conference Golfer of the Year. And JT Poston joins us now from Torrey Pines. JT, coming off that T16 last week at the WM Phoenix Open, what's the come-down process like from all that noise? Is it Advil? Is it sleep? What was the battle like to get back on the horse this week?
It's definitely a little bit of sleep. It's a busy week. It's a fun week. I always look forward to being in Phoenix and seeing all the crowds and playing on that 16th hole. So, but it definitely takes it out of you. So we tried to get a little sleep on Sunday night and last night and just try and get ready for another week out here on tour.
JT, in this new fan-forward era on the PGA Tour, where it might look more like Formula One for the signature events, where the people are there for more than just the golf, would you be in favor of that, more of a Phoenix-type atmosphere at more events, or do you think that that sort of tournament should really be the exception on the PGA Tour?
I think it kind of seems to be the exception. It's hard. It feels like it's hard to replicate. I feel like we see a lot of weeks where there's similar type atmospheres on maybe one hole, but none of them really touch just how busy and how fun that week is. And you know, I think it's great to be fan forward and get the fans involved.